This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
The Gateless Barrier. Case 22, Mahakasyapa's Flagpole. Ananda asked Mahakasyapa, "The world-honored one transmitted the robe of gold brocade to you. What else did he transmit to you?" Kasyapa said, "Ananda." Ananda answered, "Yes." Kasyapa said, "Knock down the flagpole at the gate." Woman's comment. If you can give a turning word that is intimate to this case, then you'll see that the meeting, Vulture Peak, is still vigorously in session. If you cannot, then Vipassian Buddha, who's been striving from earliest times, has not yet attained true subtlety. Wu Men's verse. The call is good, the answer is intimate. How many discuss this with glaring eyes? Elder brother calls, younger brother answers. The family disgrace. There is a spring that does not belong to yin and yang. Today I'll discuss this version of the story of Ananda and Kasyapa. It's in the Mumonkan, and next week we will, in our discussion group, look at Kazon's version and compare them. There are two things that seem to be mentioned in these various little biographies of Ananda and the cases. The first is that he was a cousin of the Buddha and said to have been born on the very day Buddha was enlightened. Quite auspicious. And the second thing about him is that he had total recall, so that for his whole life he attended Buddha's teachings and sermons and remembered them word for word and was able to provide the complete text of every Buddha's sermon to the council of monks after Buddha's death so that they could be compiled into what was to become the Pali Canon. And so perfect was his recall that apparently he remembered even the sermons that Buddha gave upon his enlightenment when, you know, the day he was born and all through his infancy. It was quite the memory. And you sort of see how people have two wonderful myths about Ananda, yet when they try to put them together, gets a little awkward. But that seems to be what happens when you mix mythology and history. In any case, it is said that even though Ananda was in attendance with Shakyamuni for his entire life, he did not achieve realization while Buddha was alive. And Buddha instead transmitted to Mahakasyapa And Ananda here is left is seen sort of questioning Buddha's successor about what else did he give you? Now it's sort of a poignant question. This is Ananda who supposedly remembers every word the Buddha spoke and is somehow still not quite satisfied. And he's sort of asking, well, yeah, I remember the 1,000 sermons I attended, but did he tell you something else? Was there some extra special thing that he said that caused you to get the transmission? Kasyapa simply calls his name, Ananda. And Ananda immediately replies, yes. Kasyapa says, knock down the flagpole at the gate. This essentially means, sermon's over. Now, Ananda is the specialist in remembering sermons and compiling thousands and thousands of words of wisdom. Kasyapa calls his name and says, that's it, nothing else. And that somehow finally got the message across to Ananda that immediacy is the point. Sometimes this is told in a way that Ananda is enlightened by the call and the response to his name. But I think the realization occurs when Kasyapa says, that's all. No, sermon's over. Because he's telling this to the sermon memorizer, right? All those thousands of words that you memorized somehow missed the point. The point is right here, right now, in immediate response. In Woman's comment, he says, if you can give a turning word that's intimate in this case, you'll see that the old Buddhist council is still in session. And if you can't, the old ancestral Buddha still hasn't tamed true subtlety. Say your intimate response, your immediate response puts you right in the middle of things, puts you right in the middle of the old assembly of Buddhas. But if you hang back, if you think there's something more, then you're like an old Buddha who still can't quite get enlightenment, who thinks there's something missing. In Wu Men's verse, he says, the elder brother calls, the younger brother answers. The family disgrace is a spring that does not belong to yin and yang. Calling and answering happen all the time. They're the most ordinary thing in the world. And we should not take them in this case to be anything special. If we fall into the sort of some kind of little Zen fetish of calling each other's names and answering, you know, as if, oh, that's it. That's a real family disgrace. How do we keep it ordinary as well as keeping it immediate? I think there's another level to this case in which it it's important to see how, for Ananda, the thing that he was most renowned for was the final obstacle to his enlightenment. He had perfect recall, knew all the Buddha's words by heart, but as a result, was preoccupied with the words of the Buddha. He knew all the words, but was still asking for more words from Kasyapa. His greatest virtue made him look in the wrong direction. He didn't need extra words, he needed immediacy. And I think that the other way to think about this too is that his very closeness to the Buddha was an obstacle. He was Buddha's cousin, his favorite, the one who sat by his side for all the sermons. And yet it kept him perpetually in a certain role in relationship to the Buddha, a role in which the Buddha has it and I'm here to listen, to be devoted to the Buddha, to get what he has. And I think that very often teachers inadvertently become obstacles like that to the student. A charismatic teacher seems to embody something the student feels they will never have for themselves. They can partake in it by staying close to the teacher, getting it second hand from the special person. But the last thing in the world they imagine is that they could be special like that too. When Joko was involved in writing the practice principles that we recite, I think the line, "Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher," came out of that sense for her. She was very aware of how students' devotion to her could be an obstacle. She did not want to be the teacher. She wanted you to remember that life was the teacher. If Joko is the teacher, that's really the family disgrace. That's where you get hung up on what did she say? What did she do? When am I going to get out to San Diego to see her next? When can I get her on the phone? How is she going to answer my question? Right? Lots of people were very close to Joko in that way for a very long time. And that kind of closeness itself is a big obstacle. It is really our task to not become close to the personal teacher, but not separate from life as the teacher, not separate from yourself as the teacher.